Hi, you've tuned in to the Lovely Travels podcast, where we talk about all things travel and adventure. My name is Emma Lovell, also known as Lovely, and I have a mission to visit every UN-recognised country in the world while raising awareness for mental health. Join me as we revisit some of my past adventures, speak to fellow travellers and interesting locals, all while following the journey to 195 countries. I'll be joined soon by my co-pilot, Darius, in Germany. And sometimes we're even going to hit the road together. Make sure to join in the adventure by following me on Instagram, Lovely Travels. You can also join our Facebook group, Lovely Travels Community, and learn more about us at the website, lovelytravels.com. But for now, it's listening time. Travel vicariously along with us. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Lovely Travels podcast. Hello, Darius. How are you today?
Good day, Emma. I am fantastic. Thank you for welcoming me. I would also like to welcome our listeners. That means you. Welcome. 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 What is today's topic of conversation, dear Emma?
We are talking about trekking, and in particular, the PCT. Which is a very famous, massive trek in the USA. But trekking for travel, and our lovely guest was Lee Foster.
Huh, she's a bit of a trekker, is she? A bit of a trekkie? Do they call themselves trekkies?
No, they definitely don't. Hiker, trekker, that would probably be it. Hiking community. I didn't know Lee to be a trekker when I knew her originally, which was right. When we worked at Arizona. Do you remember Arizona?
Oh, like the restaurant?
The Tex-Mex restaurant at Miranda Fair.
Oh, my God. Oh, geez. And wasn't there a GPK in the spot where Arizona was? Or did that come before
Arizona? GPK was on the other end of on the main road, yeah. So for all you Shire folks who are listening, we're really reminiscing about the old Westfield Miranda here. But I used to work when I was from 16, 17, I worked at Arizona, the Tex-Mex restaurant, and I worked there with Lee. And, yeah, at the time she wasn't much of a trekker, but now she is. And she did this, like, it takes 6 months. And before that, she did a trek across New Zealand for 6 months. So this is like hardcore. This is not a weekend walk. Yeah. She'll tell us all about all of it, because, like, I'm not even going to start, because I love trekking too. The longest I've done is 12 days. This is next level stuff. And I just had so much admiration, and I loved following her journey on Facebook. She just do like a post a day, and just the endurance and the organization and the, I don't know, just the willpower to do that is phenomenal.
That's amazing. I'm just looking at some pictures, and she has a tiny little backpack. She must be super organized.
When you're walking every day for 6 months, you probably don't want to carry a lot. But we'll go through all of that, packing, preparing, how she got into it. Super interesting, lovely person, and just so much admiration, so much respect. So this was a really – you can hear I'm very, very interested throughout the whole time. Yeah. Not that I'm not interested all the time, but this was definitely one for me, guys.
This is fantastic. Unless there is anything else left to say, I suggest we jump right in.
Let's listen. Enjoy, guys. Welcome to the podcast today, Lee.
Hi, thanks for having me.
This is super fun because I've known you for a very long time, but we haven't got to catch up for a while, so it's going to be a good old chat. But I always like to start with tell us a bit about who you are and maybe how we know each other.
Sure. So we go back a long way now. I don't know how many years.
I was 16, so
wow.
17 years.
Okay, 17 years, and we met waitressing at a local restaurant in Miranda.
Yeah, Tex-Mex.
And they were fun times. Yeah, they were very fun times. And it's been a while. It has been a while since then, and there's been lots of adventures that have happened. A bit about me. I guess I'd like to consider myself an ordinary adventurer. So I'm an accountant by day and weekend warrior, and I love everything outdoors and adventuring, so particularly hiking, but recently I've been getting into canyoning as well. So anytime there's a chance to get outdoors and in nature, I'm into it.
Was that always a thing, like for you, like growing up, or, you know, has that been a later in life thing?
Yeah, it's an interesting one because, I mean, I grew up in Grays Point, which is right in the national park. So it was always, you know, we were surrounded by bush, and environment was always something that was like close to me during childhood, but never, and I was a girl guide growing up, but then sort of during my uni years, never really did, and early work years, never really did too much outdoorsy stuff, and then slowly started to get back into it. I discovered a love of diving when I finished uni. I went overseas to South Africa and I learned to dive there, and that sort of started the passion for doing some more adventurous type traveling, and then started doing day hiking, and that kind of progressed into overnight hiking, and that progressed into longer hikes, and then eventually landed us, my partner and I, walking for a year across two countries. It did kind of progress over time.
Yeah, definitely. And I've just had the biggest like flashback to the fact that we hung out in England and in Czech Republic, and we had our own little adventure where we couldn't find each other on New Year's Eve. We were meant to go to that party together at it's like the biggest nightclub in Eastern Europe or something like that. And we couldn't find each other, and it was like, well, it's not going to happen. So we both entered the club and then bumped into each other on the stairwell in this club.
That was the craziest night. I remember that, and I remember having other friends there as well who I also lost during the evening, then found them later at the hostel. That was crazy.
Yeah, that was 2006. 2006, seven. So,
very different times now.
Yeah, different type of adventuring.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm pretty sure we caught up in London too. I have a memory of us being on a bus, and I think I probably have a photo of us.
I think I stayed with your family. Probably. Were you staying with your cousins over there?
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, just that. Okay. That just came to me like a bolt of lightning, and I'm like, I can now pick up my photo album. So yeah, your travel has definitely changed. But yeah, I didn't remember, because when I've seen you doing all this walking, obviously we've stayed connected on Facebook and everything.
Yeah,
I was like, I don't remember you being like, you know, I knew where you lived, near the national park and stuff. And
yeah,
I was like, I didn't think you were a massive bushwalker and hiker and stuff. So
no. And I think as well, I was never the fittest kid growing up, so I never considered myself able to do these things. It's only sort of when you get past that at a certain point in life, and I thought, oh, I can just do it. Like, I can get the fitness and I'll get there and be able to do it. So, yeah, it's been a gradual build-up.
Awesome. And so you grew up in Sydney, but where are you living now?
So I'm living in Katoomba at the moment. My partner and I bought a place up here a few years back, and we were leasing it out. And then we, as I mentioned earlier, took a year off work and spent a year hiking. And then after that, I ended up going back to do some work in Cambodia, and I was over there for about 6 months. And then COVID happened and I came home back to Sydney. My partner was still living in Sydney. And then we found out that our tenant was moving out. I moved back the end of March, and we found out this about a week after I moved back. And there's also flood damage. You might be able to see behind me, there's holes in the ceiling. Oh. So there was flood damage from February, and the tenant was moving out, we had to get work done. So we decided, well, we're both working from home. I was working remotely, you know, with Cambodia. Adam was working remotely as well. Let's move up and have some extra space and be up in the mountains for a little while. So we've been here ever since.
Very cool. And so what is your region then? Because you're out just outside of Sydney, right?
Yeah, it's weirdly, so it's really still Greater Sydney, because when all those restrictions happened and, you know, people weren't from Greater Sydney, weren't allowed to travel to Queensland and things like that, I was checking and we're still technically Greater Sydney. But Blue Mountains.
Oh, absolutely beautiful, and it very much appeals to your adventurous side.
It does.
And so the canyoning is a new thing.
Yeah, so I started doing a bit of canyoning a couple of years back before we went overseas, and ended up going out with a friend whose partner was into canyoning, and we'd done a couple of guided trips, and then she said, oh, you should come out with my partner and I. So we did and fell in love with it, and now we've been sort of building up our skills and our gear as well, buying bits and pieces of gear. And just starting to venture out on our own. So still learning a lot, but it's
And so is canyoning exciting. Like kind of like rock climbing on crack or like?
So usually it won't involve climbing. It's more scrambling. So normally you're making your way through the canyon using, you know, you might be abseiling down waterfalls and using ropes, scrambling over rocks and jumps into pools. So it's normally, you can have dry canyons as well, but I think the water is most of the fun. So it's an adventurous way to see some different parts of the bush that you maybe otherwise didn't even know existed. There's some really beautiful stuff out there, especially up here. Yeah, it's gorgeous, very lush and green.
Very cool. And so the reason, you've mentioned a couple of times, but like you went hiking for a year. Mm. I mean, how did you guys come to that decision and make that kind of happen? Because that's a big time to like, well, you know, people might travel for a year, but like doing a walking trip, that's huge.
Yeah. So I've had the PCT on my bucket list for probably 10 years. I remember seeing, it was just when we were getting into hiking, and I saw this article in, it was of all things, my health fund used to send out this magazine, and I saw it in this magazine and I was like, oh, that's amazing. Imagine walking from one end of America to the other. Like, I can't imagine doing that, but what a crazy adventure. So I like cut it out and stuck it on my fridge, and it's sort of been there ever since. So it was always in the back of my mind. And then we were doing more and more hiking, and then I was working for a startup company in Sydney, and it unfortunately, you know, things didn't go the way that they were planning to. And so everyone was pretty much made redundant in the end, and the company was wound down. And I thought, well, what better time to go and do it? And Adam was coming up to his long service leave. So he'd been with his job for almost 10 years. And we thought, we're going to do it ever. Now is the time. But we were sort of we weren't aligned on hiking the PCT. So I'd always wanted to do it. Adam was a little bit more apprehensive because of the distance. And he'd been researching other long trails, and he said, I think we should try this other trail in New Zealand first. It's not as long. And I thought, okay, well, the timing works with when we, you know, finish up work and we'll be ready to kind of to start hiking. And I thought, okay, well, we can do that, but I still want to hike the PCT. So in the end, our compromise was that we'd take a year off and hike both trails rather than taking 6 months off to hike one.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's so, yeah, and I'll just say for the listeners, so it's the Pacific Coast Trail is the but it's known
Pacific
as
Pacific Crest Trail.
Pacific Crest, yeah. Yeah. So, but it's, everyone calls it the PCT.
PCT,
right?
Yeah.
And so then what was the one in New Zealand?
So the one in New Zealand, I'm going to butcher this, but it's called the Te Araroa Trail, which means the long pathway in Maori, and it runs similarly runs from the top end of the North Island to the bottom end of the South Island. And it's a relatively new trail. It's not as old as the PCT. And being New Zealand, it's quite rugged and it's still being formed in places.
Wow.
But it was a super adventurous way to see New Zealand. And it was beautiful.
And do you go north to south instead of south to north?
Yeah. So you do. You can do it either direction, but the timing worked out better for us. So we started in October 2018 and finished around March. But the TA is nice because especially on the North Island, I mean, it gets its kind of a bad rap for it, but it goes through a lot of towns. So for us, we enjoyed it. We thought it was like a crazy way to get into through hiking because you have plenty of time off, and we took little holidays along the way and did side trips and did some of New Zealand's great walks as well. So for us, it was a nice slow way to see New Zealand.
So did you ever get in a vehicle, or you were always walking?
We did. So we were not purists for the TA. There's some really long stretches of highway that the trail makers, they haven't figured out a way to get around yet. They might be working out, you know, access to land or things like that. So there are some really long stretches of highway, and that gets really hard on your feet pretty quickly.
Yes.
So, and your joints. So there were people that did do that, and they would push themselves to sort of walk every step of the trail. But for us, that was not why we came to do it. Like, you can walk on a highway anywhere. It's not the most enjoyable thing to do.
No.
So we would hitchhike, and not all of it. We walked some of the roads and some of the highways, but that in itself was another kettle of fish. We'd never hitchhiked before going to New Zealand, and we met some of the most incredible people. And yeah, it was always really eye-opening who would stop and pick you up on the side of the road when you look like a hobo and you smelt pretty bad.
And so the accommodation, I guess, was probably a bit nicer, or you had the option to stay in nicer places, but were you camping as well?
Yeah, well, camping most of the time. We did sort of splurge on hotels every now and then, but you might sort of, on the North Island, end up in a town and camp at a holiday park. But on the South Island, it was predominantly sort of bush camping or in DOC campgrounds and that sort of thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so how do you budget for like 6 months of that?
Yeah, it's hard. New Zealand's probably more of an expensive hike because you spend so much time in and around towns, and you can't always free camp. You can't just camp somewhere, anywhere you want in New Zealand anymore. You might have to camp in a campground and pay for it. So it is a little bit more expensive. We're kind of lucky. I mean, Adam had his long service leave, so he's still getting paid while we're there. And, you know, I had a payout from being made redundant, if you can call that lucky. So it worked out well. But we kind of just went off rough guides of what people were saying they spent and kind of crossed our fingers and went from there.
Yeah. I think about and then the food situation, like how do you plan ahead? Because, I mean, you weren't always sure you were going to be in a town, right? So how do you plan food?
Yeah, and that's probably one of the biggest things that I was nervous about going into it, is that you don't know. Once you get into a long trail and you start a rhythm and you get used to it, it's, you know, you kind of think, oh, what was I worried about at the start? But when you're planning a journey like that, you kind of think, oh, do I have to plan all of my food drops or the whole thing? Or like, how do you do this? But because you're going through so many towns on the North Island, you kind of just work out, okay, how many days till I get to the next town roughly, and you kind of budget an extra day's food. That's pretty much how we took it. There was only probably three places that we sent a food drop to. Like, so we'd get to a bigger town, package up a box full of, you know, non-perishable food items, and then ship it to ourselves in another town. So there's a couple of places on the South Island we needed to do that, but mostly you just kind of work out roughly how long it's going to be to the next town, and then you stock up when you get there.
It blows my mind because, like, I'm looking, I want to do in Tasmania, Cradle Mountain.
Oh, the Overland?
Overland.
Yeah.
And we were almost going to do it and then, you know, had all things lined up, was starting to get the information actually from our friend Jessica Picton's done it.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, had all these things lined up and then it was like, idiot, national park passes. They sell out so quickly. So we hadn't bought all the stuff or anything, but we were like, yeah. It was just all going ahead planning. And I was like, this isn't so hard. What's everyone talking about? And I was like, you literally can't go into the national park because it gets full. But yeah. I am a bit daunted also by the carrying of stuff because I've done quite a bit of trekking, you've probably seen. But
yeah,
it's definitely on the glampy side.
Yeah,
where I'm going with a company. I was often the tour leader and your tent gets set up for you. It's carried for you. You're really carrying only – I was only carrying a day pack ever. Even I did Kokoda last year where you do have the option to carry your bag. And I said, no, thank you. I'll pay the local. So, you know, I really wanted to do one, but it's like, yeah, you're carrying everything. You're carrying your tent, you're carrying your sleeping mat, you're carrying your clothing for the foreseeable future. And I'm only looking at 7 days and I'm like, oh my God, how do you carry all this food? That's amazing.
It doesn't take long and you realize what you need and what you don't, and you cut that list down pretty fast. Otherwise you end up pretty sore trying to carry it all. But yeah, the food situation does get pretty grim, and the longer you're on a trail, the less you care about it and everything starts to look good. They call it hiker hunger and it sets in differently for different people, but normally after a month, you know, you're eating the weirdest concoction of food. So dinner might be, ramen with powdered mashed potato mixed in it. It's just the highest calorie things you can possibly find. And, you know, standard lunch would be like a tortilla because they last forever. They're so full of preservatives with peanut butter on it and maybe some like trail mix. You know, or you might have like, I would try and if I went to town, get some eggs and boil them and carry those for a couple of days, or cheese, things like that that keeps. But it's normally the highest calorie to weight ratio that you can find. So a lot of nut butter.
Yeah, wow. Oh my God. Yeah, and look, so it's a pretty weird warm up, you know, like easing yourself in doing a 6-month trip. But then you went on the PCT, which is that's full on, right?
Yeah, it's you know, I guess the thing that scared me the most about the PCT, one of the things was, you know, bears was a big thing before I realised that there weren't actually anything to worry about on the PCT. But the next biggest thing was the snow, and I thought, oh, it'll be fine. And then it turned out it was a really high snow year. And so a few weeks before I was leaving, I was thinking, oh, gosh, please just let it melt. Please make it warm and so I don't have to deal with this snow. But when we finished the TA, it was only about 6 weeks before I went and after I got home and when I went to the US, and Adam finished the TA pretty skinny and pretty weary, and he had actually not quit his job but just had a period of leave. So he ended up going back to work for a few months and I went and started the PCT on my own. So I was also starting off on my own after we'd been walking together and living in a tent together for 6 months. So that was also a change. And so I was still feeling pretty anxious about it, but I was really lucky. So I started the trail. There's a couple of trail angels. So this is a really big thing in the US, and one of the most beautiful things about American through hiking culture is the trail community. Yep. And there are two trail angels based in San Diego in California, and they host thousands of hikers every season in their house. They set up big tents in their backyard and they put on food for everyone every day, 3 meals a day. They shuttle you into town to get food and get a US phone card and get gear and anything you need, and then you can stay with them if you're in international for up to 3 days before the hike, and then they ship you all out to the start of the trail and set you off on your way. So that was incredible, and it was really comforting to have that starting a trail in somewhere so foreign when, you know, you don't know anyone. And I ended up meeting a couple of people there and started the trail with this group of guys who ended up, you know, I'm still in touch with them now and, you know, hiked with them pretty steadily for a couple of months and then wow. sort of saw them on and off on the trail right up to the end. So,
and what month was it that you started?
So I started in April, so okay. late April. And normally by that stage the snow is pretty much melted, but unfortunately it was a high snow year for us, so that meant learning how to use an ice axe and micro spikes and just dealing with snow, and I'd never walked on snow before, so it was completely
new. Are you a skier? Do you?
No. I've been on the annual school ski trip once and that was about it.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's pretty brutal. Yeah. When I was trekking in Nepal, we had a full snow day and it's just as well, it just, cause it covers everything. You don't know what you're walking on. Yeah. And so you're like, this stuff could just fall away. And, you know, yeah, if you lose sight of people, you're like, I could go in any direction and I don't know where I am. It's very disorientating.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So I'm basing a lot of my PCT knowledge, as I'm sure a lot of people do, off the movie Wild and the book. I love the book too. So did you read that or watch that?
I've read the book and I've watched the movie. It's very different now. And I think the trail is a very different experience now. And a
lot that of was people, 20 years ago she did.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. So there's definitely less people doing the trail. A lot of people who hike the trail are quite negative about that book and about the movie because they think it's, you know, encourage more people to hike the trail that maybe shouldn't be hiking it. But, I think it's also a good thing if it encourages people to get outside and do these things. So, some similarities. I think she also had a high snow year and skipped the Sierras though. So, and maybe didn't walk all the trail. Of it true, but she also had pretty poor gear choices.
Yes, I remember that was a big I mean the gear has changed. It would be so lightweight now. But I remember there's, where she started out with just so much stuff.
Yeah.
And just basically went to a shop and just bought up everything. And then over the time, she had somebody help her and really, like, sort out what she shouldn't have. Yeah. That was very vivid, that bit for me. I was like, but what if you need that thing?
Yeah.
Like, how do you deal with having so little? And I guess I know I've done trips now and you just do wear the same stuff and get on and you manage it and you get, when you have to pack your bag every single day, you get pretty good at working out where things go and what's accessible and
exactly. I mean, and that's still a thing. Like, pack shakedowns is still a thing. So you can get people to help you look through your pack and kind of be really critical on what maybe you don't need, what you do need. You learn pretty really quickly. You know, you have bare minimal and nothing else. So, you know, I'd carry one spare pair of undies and people would think that was a luxury. So people get really, really fanatical about, you know, about their gear and about how much things weigh. So there's definitely no excess, you know, and have the clothes you're wearing, something warm, some rain gear and a spare pair of undies and a spare pair of socks as well. And that was it in terms of clothes and, very minimal sleep setup, sleeping bag and, you know, making the most of everything. So instead of having like a blow-up pillow, I would take my warm jacket and put that inside a stuff sack of a night and sleep on that and things like that. So you get pretty... Yeah. Pretty used to it.
the socks, I do agree with having a second pair of socks because they're like, if your feet get sore, like, and if you've, you know, if your feet get wet or whatever, and I think there's just also pressure points. Like, I think being able to change this, alternate the socks is really important because, if your feet aren't working, you're done.
Yeah, exactly.
And how were your feet? Like, how were you, like, on those two trips, did you guys suffer any injuries or?
I was pretty lucky on both accounts. Adam had a hard time in New Zealand, not with blisters or anything like that, but his feet were really painful from the walking on roads so much.
Yes.
I didn't have it as bad, but yeah, he was in a lot of pain on the North Island and it got better on the South Island. And I was in boots for most of the North Island, and then when we moved across to the South Island, I ended up transitioning to trail runners and my boots wore out. But it was pretty good. I had a few minor blisters, but nothing major. Yeah. Your feet toughen up really quickly. And particularly in New Zealand, the Kiwis are pretty tough. So they won't take their shoes off to walk through a stream because it's so wet over there. Your feet are normally wet anyway. So you get used to just walking in wet shoes all the time. And then we got really used to that style of walking. And then when we went to the US, people thought I was nuts because they'd be taking off their shoes to walk across the stream and I'd just plow straight through. And they're like, oh, what are you doing? But yeah, get used to it pretty quickly.
Yeah, well, like it's very tedious as well, doesn't it? Taking your shoes off, drying your feet, putting them back on, and sometimes that can leave them feeling a bit tender as well. So it's kind of like, yeah, you kind of got to get on. But I do like to, at the end of the day, change the socks because it's a pretty awful feeling putting on the damp socks and the
it's next not day. Nice. Yeah. And there was periods for us in the High Sierras when, you know, we were camped. And then towards the end of the trail in Washington, the snow sort of came in early. This is on the PCT that, you know, you'd wake up in the morning and everything was frozen. So you'd have your shoes and your socks in the tent, but they'd still be frozen. So you'd literally just have to force them onto your feet to make them defrost. That was pretty uncomfortable.
Well, I got the best tip when we were in Nepal because the rooms were just so – have you been to Nepal?
Yeah.
The room, even inside, it's weird. Sometimes it's like almost colder inside than it is outside. The insulation in buildings is terrible. I remember one night it was like minus 19 inside. And our guide told us put your underwear and your socks and like all your whatever you want to wear on your body in your tent, in your sleeping bag with you, as well as your electronics, so that they won't freeze and they'll stay with your body temperature. And then in the morning you put your nice warm things on.
It does make a difference.
It's a huge difference because, oh my God, it's just I find always there's like my nose being out. I can't sleep.
Yeah.
Your nose is cold and you're like, but then you can't breathe because you're inside.
Yeah. It's the trade-off, right? You either suffocate or you have a freezing face.
Nose. Yeah. And then you're like, oh, and everyone, and you need the sleep because you've got to rest for the trip. And you're like, but you're like, I can't sleep because my nose is cold. the fun. But so did Adam do sort of like the second half with you? Or like, how did he get to meet you?
So he joined me at the Sierras, so at Lone Pines. I don't know how many miles it is in, but it was about 2 months in. And we just kind of had to guess, and then it worked out pretty good guess. And I waited for him maybe a day or two in town before he got in on his flight. But we were pretty ambitious, or he was pretty ambitious, because that's going into some of the highest altitude on the trail. So he went from, you know, a couple of months, you know, working long hours, sitting at a desk, eating takeaway to, you know, up at a few thousand feet, and where we sort of rejoin the trail together, you have the option to hike Mount Whitney, which is the tallest mountain in the US. And we thought, oh, we'll give it a go. And it was definitely the wrong idea. So it was only a couple of days after rejoining the trail, and he ended up getting pretty bad altitude sickness and we had to come back down.
Yeah.
But it was sort of a rough entrance for him, but rough introduction for him, but after those first couple of rough days, he was pretty good after that. So he was a trooper.
Oh, wow. No, yeah. I think I remember you posting that you guys had, gone given it a crack, and because I was following your journey. I mean, I can't believe it. So how many miles, and do you know that in kilometres it is?
Yeah, so it's just over, I think it's 4,200 kilometres. So 2,600 miles.
That's like Sydney to Brisbane times four. that's a lot of space.
It is a lot. But, you know, it's and people have asked me, like, don't you get bored? Like, how do you just walk every day? But you see so much different stuff, and it's just such a lovely way to travel, and it's a lovely way of living. Like, so simply, you learn what you need and what you don't need, and you just appreciate everything. You appreciate being warm and dry, and you appreciate the amazing things you see, and every day there'll always be something new and beautiful, and you'd have your hard days, but it's also you'd have the best days as well. So wow. It's definitely an amazing way to travel.
And so on the PCT, there's not really that holidaying as much, is there? But like, how do you plan in like rest days? Like, how did you factor that in?
Yeah, there's definitely not sort of the holiday vibe that we had on the TA. Even though the TA is really tough going, like the terrain's actually probably more rugged than the PCT, but and it's a bit steeper. But you definitely stretch for time because you've got that weather constraint in the US, and you've got to make it to Canada before the snow sets in, otherwise you're stuck. So it was pretty go, go, go. So we would normally take a rest day in town if we needed to, and a lot of people would try and push through, but we'd find that we'd run into people on the trail and they'd be go, 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 and they'd be doing huge days, and then they get to town and they wouldn't want to stop, and then you'd meet them like a month later and they had to take a week off because they had an injury. So it was kind of like the tortoise and the hare type thing, and we were definitely the tortoise of our year class, and I think we finished pretty late in the season, but it worked well for us. Neither of us are super fast hikers, so we'd just make sure we had enough time in town to recover. So we'd normally take half a day or a day and then get refreshed and get back out on trail, eat lots.
Yeah.
Usually a tub of ice cream and a pizza, and we'd be back out on trail.
And how long is a day? Like, what's an average sort of, I guess, you know, it depends on the terrain, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, you don't go as far, but it's a longer day. I totally understand that. But what sort of would you aim for?
Yeah, so it does vary. Sort of earlier on in the trail, I tried not to do really long days, so then maybe 20-mile days, and you've got to be mindful of the heat as well and trying to walk when it's not so hot. Through the Sierras, you know, like 12 miles might be a great day, and, you know, you're also constrained by the passes, and because everything was snow covered, you'd have to be mindful that you were getting up and over a pass while the snow was still quite firm, and so you'd have to do that early in the day, and then you might have to wait the next morning until you could tackle the next pass. So, you know, like 12, 15 miles might have been a really good day in the Sierras. But then once you get your trail legs and you're sort of into Oregon's the next state, and, you know, Northern California, and it's a little bit flatter, you could do 30 or 40 miles in a day. And wake up and feel fine the next day. So it's quite incredible what your body can do from someone that's, you know, never been quite that fit. You get your fitness up pretty quick.
And what was the sort of training you did before New Zealand? And obviously then New Zealand was training for PCT.
Yeah. I would just try and walk everywhere, and I would try and walk home from work, you know, like, and that might have been an hour walking home from the city to the inner west, and walked in my boots that I was going to be hiking in.
Yeah.
And tried to walk with a pack. And my attitude towards it was I just wanted my ankles and my knees to be strong enough that I wasn't going to injure myself.
Yeah.
And I just knew that, you know, it would take a little while to get the rest of the strength up and, you know, be doing long days and whatever, and not be panting the whole time. But I was okay with that as long as I wasn't going to injure myself, you know, and stop myself from being able to hike the rest of the trail. So that kind of served me pretty well. I did, you know, I used to do a lot of aerial yoga and a lot of, there was a lot of core strength in that, a bit of Pilates, and the old bar class doesn't help. It doesn't hurt as well with all the leg work.
Yeah.
So just general fitness, I think, is enough.
And that's something that people miss. I know that because I used to work for the companies that I also did the tour leading for, so I'd help people prepare. And I just say to them, like, if your legs are strong, because someone gave me the tip, he did Kokoda the year that I did my first big trick, which was Kilimanjaro. And he said, just squats, lunges, squats, and just.
Yeah.
Because you can't replicate it. You can't, could no way have replicated a 6-month trek, and we can't even replicate a 7-day trek because you're just not going to do that at home. So having strong legs and strong supporting muscles around those joints and things was a really great tip. And also terrain, because people do, they train. I had people training for the Lara Pinta, which is like ground that we don't see. It's red desert. And they're training walking around on the path, in their suburb, and doing like 5Ks, and it's like, it's just not going to prepare you. You've got to get out in the bush, and on uneven ground, and
get your ankles ready for it.
But it totally, and like, I came back from one of my trips, and I talked to my physio, and I was like, my knees hurt, and la la la, and he's like, it doesn't matter, because I was like, what should I have done? How can I prepare? And there's, the strengthening stuff. But he said, ultimately, when you're doing repetitive walking, and you're doing this stuff over consecutive days, you're probably going to be sore. Anybody will be, so you kind of got to, I don't know about you, but you got to go in knowing that it's going to be a bit sore.
Yeah, it hurts. You're in pain. But when you get up in the mornings, and, it took not as much after the PCT, but after the TA, it probably took until I started the PCT just for my feet not to hurt in the morning when I would get up. Like, I'd get up out of bed, put my feet on the floor, and I'd forgotten about this actually, but your feet would be in so much pain for about 30 minutes until like they kind of warmed up, because it's just the weight on them all day and on the hard ground. It's just, there is an element of pain, and you will, you'll be stiff. But I think stretching is really important as well, to stretch when you can, because that can also cause some damage if you're not stretching.
Absolutely. Mm. And so what would you say, it's probably a hard thing to say, but and we'll go back to the PCT, what was the best bit? Mm. Or what was your highlight, or what was the thing you took away?
I think in terms of part of the trail, definitely the Sierras, because it's something so different, like seeing so much snow, having to learn to use an ice axe and conquering these high mountain passes. That was something I never would have thought I could do. And if I knew how scary it was going to be for me going into it, I probably wouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
But it was so spectacularly beautiful, and we don't have anything like that here. And seeing the clear mountain lakes and that alpine environment where you're above the trees, that was just incredible. And to be in it for such an extended period of time was amazing. But it was also, it was quite tough. And then I think the other thing for me was, I'd never been to the US before, and you hear really mixed things. No, never been. See, you hear, growing up in Australia, you hear all the mixed things about the US, you hear all these things in the news, and you just think, oh, what's it actually going to be like there? But the people were so beautiful, and the trail community is incredible. Mm. And I can't imagine Australians being as generous and as welcoming as people that we met supporting the trail there. You'd have absolute strangers camp out in the middle of nowhere to bring people food in the middle of the trail, or offer you their place to stay at, and you're a complete stranger, but they shower you and feed you and kind of pick you up from the trail, get you back on the trail, run you out to do shopping, like just incredibly generous people. That was also a really good part of it as well.
Yeah, and I think like some people are really, especially like Australia and the UK and stuff, I think people think that going to America, it's going to be like here, and just a commercial version of here. But in terms of landscape, it's so different. It's epically stunning. I mean,
yeah,
it's massive. So it spans such a huge, and you got to see such a huge part of it. But the people, yeah, I've been 14 times.
And, wow, that's incredible.
Well, my cousin's there.
Okay. But,
you know, like I just got sent, I've got a blanket behind me that was made by my friends. You know, I've got a lady messaging today, like who's going to send me a package as well for the baby.
No.
Like they just, and where my cousin lives is the Midwest, and it's just like, it's that all American type,
yeah,
welcoming vibe, and they just think of me as family now, and you know they are very generous. I say that, you know, like I think we see Americans outside of America too, and when they're traveling, and to be honest, they can be a bit obnoxious, and they're aware of it too. They know, but Americans in America, I love,
yeah,
absolutely love, and you know, there's different cultures. You would have seen it too, different cultures across the states,
yeah,
because they're so big and they are so far from each other that
yeah,
they each place has their own culture. So I think people, we really want to do one time like a road trip in the US, you know, and go across the different, I've been to 11 states, but I would love, you know, there's 50.
Yeah, that's incredible.
I keep getting this wrong, but anyway. It's in my head wrong, but anyway. There's a lot of states, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
it's so big.
A big misconception about America.
Definitely.
They are lovely people.
Yeah, I think we've definitely got, you know, tall poppy syndrome here, and I think we're a bit wary of people. Yeah, it's different over there. And it might be partly the trail as well, but, like, for example, when we were sort of, you know, up in Washington, this lady reached out and she'd sort of been following hikers on the trail, and she'd retired and her husband was still working, so she had a little bit of free time, and she was in Seattle, and she was like, if you ever need anything, like, close to the trail. And we didn't need anything at the time, but we messaged her when we finished the trail, and we said, oh, we're going to be coming back through, like, could we stay with you? We thought, why not? We'll just ask her. And they ended up being the most beautiful people, and we're still in touch with them. And we got the bus into Seattle. She came and met us in the city. She took our bags from us and was like, you just go explore, gave us like whatever their version of the Opal card is, like to get.
Yes.
And she told us how to get back to their house on transport. And then they took us out for dinner, and like she made us pie. She did all these incredible things, showed us around the city. Like just, I just can't imagine someone doing that here in Australia. I don't know, maybe I'm a bit cynical, but
yeah. Well, you know, and it's, I think when you've lived in your own city for a long time too, but I mean, and their appreciation of the outdoors too, like there's a big culture across the US, and I love seeing it, the hiking and the camping and the just generally being out and about, and they take it pretty seriously in some places. So yeah, that it's incredible. And
yeah,
how I love that, the trail angels, and you know, I saw a little bit of that and it, you know, and read a little bit about the book, but I didn't know if, you know, how much was still going on, and then the fact
yeah,
that you meet other people. Was it mostly American travelers that you met?
Is it mixed actually? So, you know, I started the trail with, you know, some Americans, English, Europeans, few Australians, Kiwis. It's a really, really big mix.
Yeah.
And then less so, still there's not great diversity in hiking, like in the through hiking scene now, which is, you know, I think something that's becoming more topical at the moment. And some people, some people from Asian countries, and but yeah, not as much. So it's mainly sort of Europe and yeah, Australasia and the US and the UK, but yeah, it's a bit of a mix.
Well, and it can be, I mean, you can do it somewhat cheaply, but I think maybe as well some of the gear could be a bit, you know, if people can't afford the gear to do a trek like that, you just can't.
Yeah, it's definitely like there's a high proportion. It seemed like we were actually one of the smaller demographics, so it seems like you get a lot of young kids that have kids, but I sound like an 80-year-old, but you get a lot of young people that might have just finished school or uni that are like, oh, I'll take my gap year and I'll spend my time hiking. Yeah. Which is awesome. I was definitely not that ambitious when I was 19. I was obviously getting drunk with you in Prague.
which is also great.
And then sort of the, you know, there's also like older people. So like people who'd sort of, you know, done the house and kids and whatever, and then they were sort of enjoying their retirement. So yeah, it was probably like less people in that middle age demographic, I think, because people are mostly like working, they've got a mortgage, they're like starting to have kids and that sort of thing. Which was interesting.
Very interesting. And so do you have other big treks on your bucket list now, or are you sort of hanging up the boots for a little while? Or
At the moment I'm working and I've got two awesome jobs at the moment. So, but the moment I'll be working and with, you know, with things the way they are at the moment. But I've been thinking for a while it would be cool to do like a long walk through Australia. So there is a trail that goes sort of up the east, not on the coast, but sort of relatively on the east coast, and that's the Bicentennial National Trail. And that's similar to the PCT. It was started as an equine trail and still is used as an equine trail, but it's not the greatest for walking. So I've been thinking about that and maybe adapting parts of that. There are a couple of guys who have done it, but not many people have walked the whole thing. And I've also been eyeing off Bibulum Track in WA as well.
Okay.
I think it's anyone who's walked it or reviews that you read of people say it's just a really pleasant walk. So that's about 1,000 Ks.
Which to you now is like, whatever. I'll do it in a weekend. Like, no, that would still take like 2 months.
So. Yeah, a couple of months. I think a couple of months would be good. It's meant to be quite nice. You don't have any really dramatic views, but it's meant to be quite a nice walk. So. There's a few.
What about
things.
Like the El Camino or any of those sort of ones, or are they too touristy for you?
Do you know, like I'm going to be honest, I had kind of written off the El Camino because I thought, oh, so many people around, but you know, I'm thinking about it. So like I met this Spanish guy on the PCT and unfortunately he ended up having to stop the trail. So I started the trail with him and he had to stop quite early because he had knee issues. But he was like, you know, just he sold it to me because he was like, it's such a great, like great way to meet people and you're just eating and drinking every night.
Very social.
And very social. And I was like, actually, that does sound kind of nice. And I thought maybe for my 40th, I'll do that, you know, like even.
Considering what you've done, it would be like practically luxurious. Like other people are there and they're like, this is a challenge. You just be like, I'm just getting to the next vino. Like just keep walking. And I'm a bit of a purist for that one. One of my friends went and I've been invited a couple of times to go.
Yeah.
They were doing it like a week of it, or they were going to do one part and then get a train. And for me, I'm like, when I commit to something, I would be the same if I ever did decide something like the PCT. I'd be like, if I'm doing it, I'm doing it all.
Yeah, definitely.
So for me, it's been, I do the, well, and even then the El Camino has longer routes as well, but I was going to do the traditional ones like from France to Santiago, you know, Compostela, yeah. Yes, I was just interested, so wondering if you would go and do some of the other bucket listy type ones now, or if they were a bit like, no.
Yeah.
Tourists.
I think I would. And I've also been, there's a couple of great hikes in Iceland as well. There's cool stuff everywhere. Like there's a really cool one you can do in Japan where you go to like different temples and heaps of cool stuff. So, yeah.
And it's just, it's a little bit addictive, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's the problem. Like I did Kilimanjaro and then I heard about Kokoda and then I was like, ooh, Machu Picchu. And then when you're there, somebody else has done another one and I'm also competitive. Yeah. So I'm like, well, if you've done that one, I'm going to go and do it, you know.
Yeah.
Doing a trek in Bhutan, actually a good one, the Snowman Trail.
I'd love to go to Bhutan. That's been on my list for a while.
It's a 30-day one. I think it's called the Snowman Trail or something.
Mm, okay.
I told my guide I'm going to come back and do it and he was like, I don't think you can. And I was like, because you've said that, I will actively come back and do it.
Yeah.
Just to prove you wrong, like challenge accepted, buddy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there is. The world is there to explore and as exactly. You said before, trekking and walking, you just see stuff and that you just cannot see any other way. And I think there's that you know, yes, you could get there, sometimes you could get there by helicopter or something, like there's another way to access it, but there's, for me, that sense of earning it.
Yeah.
I've earned that view. I don't.
And it's the immersiveness, I think, as well, being something special about hiking.
And you ride, like, going around a corner and, you know, you've got that, you know, building up and then to have that view revealed in front of you that you didn't know was going to be there, that it's breathtaking.
Yeah, exactly.
Ooh, I love it.
Oh yeah, it's definitely more to do. And there's still more in the US to do as well. There's so much in the US. There's, you know, maybe thinking about the CDT, which kind of goes through the middle of the US, but it's, there's lots.
Well, I am absolutely in awe. I loved following your journey on there and we'll put up a couple of photos for the listeners. Absolutely. Congratulations. It's a huge achievement and I'm sure you have memories for a lifetime. So thank you for sharing some with us.
Thanks, Em. Thanks for following. It was great to chat to you.
You too.
And thank good you. To catch up.
Thanks for listening, everyone. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. Already looking forward to the next one. We also have a rather extensive back catalogue for you to check out. But in the meantime, you can follow us on Instagram. That's at Lovely Travels on Instagram.
Or you can come and check us out on Facebook, Lovely Travels. That's LOVELLY. Or we would love for you to join our Facebook community with more than 500 members talking all things travel and adventure. That's the Lovely Travels community.
You can also visit our website, which is lovelytravels.com.
Or shoot us an email. We love hearing from our listeners. So please send us an email, feedback, comments, questions, whatever. info@lovelytravels.com.
And you can listen, review, subscribe, like, share, and promote our podcast in any shape, way, or form. We are on Spotify, iTunes, the internet, Google Podcasts. Everywhere where you get podcasts, you will find us.
All good podcasting locations. So that's tune in right. Next time, guys. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you then.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.